How's everyone doing? Welcome to episode 429 of Global From Asia podcast. Today we're going to talk about food import and export in Thailand to the USA. Let's tune in.
Welcome to the Global From Asia podcast, where the daunting process of running an international business is broken down into straight up actionable advice. And now, your host, Michael Michelini.
Hello, guys. Again, this is a new face here. And again, my name is Yesha, and I'm here with Mike with me. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. It's great to have you. It's exciting. Your first time on the show. How are you feeling? All right?
I'm feeling okay. I'm feeling like I'm definitely feeling good right now. And I'm just grateful that you have me here right now.
Yeah, there's lots of plans. I think maybe in the future shows, we can share some of the plans that we have with your help. But we'll also talk about it in the outro. So after the interview, maybe we can share some of our ideas of how you can help our show and the community. So then those interested, definitely tune in after the show interview. Today, like you said, in the preview, we have food export from Thailand, Genghis Gonzalez. This is an expert on logistics. He's an American-born Thai expert. So we have a long presentation today, and we're talking about food export. Everybody likes food, right?
Yeah,
who doesn't like
including
food?
Me.
Yeah,
of course. Yes.
We'll talk about some favorite foods after too. We can hear some of your food, favorite food, my favorite food. What?
Definitely.
We'll get into that, but let's tune into the show real quick. Also, we have slides. This one was a really comprehensive discussion, and he has a PowerPoint. So if people want to get that, go on to the show notes at globalfromasia.com/thai-food-exports. All right, Yesha, let's do it. Let's go into the interview, and then we'll talk after.
Okay, let's go.
Are you looking for USA banking solutions for your e-commerce business? I am proud to say Mercury.com is supporting the podcast here third year in a row at Global From Asia. And we're proud to say it because we use them ourselves for many of our own Amazon brands and e-commerce brands and joint ventures with our US structures. And they're super easy to do, online application, no fees. And they have great customer support, have helped us with trouble with Amazon Seller Central over the years about some receipts and statements and everything like that. So we're so happy to say thank you, Mercury, for supporting our show, being a great service and supporting other e-commerce sellers. We're really proud to say they're a sponsor here. And we also have a video tutorial as well as an overview and a special link with a little bonus for you as well for us under certain conditions. Check it out at globalfromasia.com/mercury for that information. Thank you for listening and thank you, Mercury.
Yeah, so today we're gonna be talking about sending food from Thailand specifically into the US. We focus on the US is because that's where we ship all our goods, but the process is probably going to be about 90% the same for other countries because there's still a paperwork trail that you have to leave behind. So before we start, a quick introduction. My name is Genghis Gonzalez. I've been living here in Chiang Mai for about 7 or 8 years. Prior to moving out here, I actually worked in Amazon in one of the fulfillment centers under their operations department. So it kind of gave me an insight on to what to do to ship into the Amazon. And since then, we've branched out. Once we moved here, we branched out. We're now manufacturing ceramic tableware, so plates, bowls, things like that. And then, of course, we do logistics. We ship a lot. So just about anything that's produced in Thailand for consumers, we've shipped, whether it's furniture or foodstuffs, as you can see here, home decor, clothing. So yeah, so we can get it over. We have a warehouse in Los Angeles, and we have one out here in Chiang Mai as well, so it makes the transition pretty seamless. Okay, so today we're going to talk about getting food from Thailand into the US. Let me run you through the agenda really quickly. I'm hoping that this will only take about 40 minutes or so, 45 minutes, since it's such a small crew today. Feel free to stop me at any time, ask some questions. And if we go down a rabbit hole, we can go down a rabbit hole. And then Mike, just feel free to tell me, hey, time or speed it up or whatever. I'm happy with that. So we're going to be talking a little bit about admin stuff, which is your DUNS number and how to get an FDA registration. So that's like pretty much your first step. And then for those of you that are sending more complicated foods, your food canning establishment registration, and then your SID, which is basically an SKU registration. Then we'll talk a little bit more about some FDA requirements, such as labeling, nutrition labeling, which you're more than familiar with, I'm sure. And then another round of admin stuff. So you can see there's a lot of admin when it comes to sending food. This is gonna be how you file your export, your import paperwork. And then hopefully more of the fun stuff. We'll talk about sourcing tips and then some of the trends and some of the good practices we've seen through all our years of shipping food into the US. And then, of course, we have a section at the end for questions, but again, feel free to stop me at any time. Let's get started. Okay, so our background, these are some of the brands that we've shipped over that allow us to basically advertise. We have a few brands that haven't, that we signed an NDA with, so they're some of the large brands, but some of these brands you may be familiar with, Bee Garlic, Siam Kitchen, Tanbury, Jaylek, they're nationwide. You'll see them in 7-Eleven, Big C, places like that. And then this all over the place. So we have coconut powder, we have meal kits, chili, these are snacks, this is juice, dipping sauce, sugar, garlic, coffee, Sunny C, I think they do dried fruit, Siam Kitchen does sauces, Papa Jack does canned fruit, Wanali does dried herbs, Chai is a dipping sauce company, Lamoon is jam, Prem is coconut nectar, Rootworks does rice meal kits. So we do a whole bunch of food. So we're pretty sure that as long as your stuff is legit, we can get it in to the US and put it up on sale. That's a super long story. We can do honey. We have shipped honey. Honey is very tricky to ship out of Thailand because the FDA in the US will randomly test honey to make sure that it's legit honey. And long story short, we had a customer ship honey, and it turns out they were feeding the bees sugar instead of nectar, and that triggered an audit by the FDA. They found out and got blocked. So that was our experience with honey. So these are the categories that we can do and we have done. So dried or preserved fruits and vegetables, coffee, tea, sugar, spices, rice, grains, noodles, meal kits, anything jarred, canned, like curries, jams, canned fruit, sauces, meat products. No, it's not that we can't send them, but the paperwork trail is so complicated that this is probably only going to be your large giant companies that can afford to get tested. Supplements, yes, we can, as long as you market as a non-drug. Juice, plant juices, for example, we send sesame seed milk is a product we've shipped. All sorts of snacks. And then drugs is something we can't send, that requires too much FDA approval. And just to give you an example of something really common, like skin whitening pills or things like that, super common here in Thailand. Okay, so really the first step is the boring stuff is paperwork. So you're going to need a DUNS registration. So that's a Dun & Bradstreet number. This is a free to get online, and it's basically a company that basically says this is a legitimate business, right? So that's your first thing that you'll need. The second thing you'll need is some sort of an import agent, somebody that is authorized to act on your behalf to clear your goods, and if it comes down to it, serve as your representative if there's an issue. Now, the agent does have to be a US citizen or permanent resident. If you are one, you can be your own agent. If not, you'll need to find one. And then, of course, the next step is you actually have to register the facility. So your facility should be FDA registered. And let's see. Yeah, these are the three main things you'll need to get started. Just to give you an update, FDA registration is technically free if you can go through the mountain of paperwork, right? It's just paperwork that you got to fill out and make sure it's correct. Similarly, getting an agent is free if you can do it yourself. Registering with DUNS is also free if you can go through the paperwork. Some companies like Registrar Corp will do this for you. We'll also do it for you. Registrar Corp is a much older, much more established company, but they are expensive. So they'll charge currently around $500 a registration if you want to kind of go through the process with them. So we need to register your facility so that we can export into the United States, right? So there's many different kinds of registrations you can do. The three most common we've seen are we actually register the factory itself. We register a similar location that does the labeling. And then the next one is we actually can register a warehouse instead. So just to give you an idea, let's say it looks like they're making pies or cookies here. We can register the factory that's making those cookies. Let's say the cookies are packaged or labeled elsewhere, we can register that. Or if it's got a final storage location before it's actually shipped out to the US, we can register that as well. And this is order of preference. Any questions so far about what we can and can't register? All right, if not, you probably think of something. Okay, now let's talk about something that's a little more complicated. Canned food, or basically anything liquid is considered a canned food. So this could be bottled, it could be jarred, it could be packaged in like a seal, like tear open seal and you squeeze it out and it's liquid. This is one of the most complicated things to register because people are worried about bacteria, fungus, all sorts of, it's not dried fruit, so it's not naturally what do you call it? What's the right word? Disinfectant? Like it's just not naturally.
Pasteurized.
Yeah, exactly. Or like just like bacteria just have a tough time growing on it. Okay, so these are some of the examples of canned foods, or what's called a canned food that we've shipped out has been fruit, sauces, juices, curries. So what you'll need to do is an FCE registration on top of your FDA registration. So FCE stands for Food Canning Establishment. Okay, so this is where it gets a little technical. When you're preserving food in some sort of a can or liquid form, you have to either register it as low acid or acidified. So, and the threshold is a pH of 4.6. So if it's an acidified food, that's the easiest because a lot of foods, they'll actually add acid. Like, I don't know what the actual acid, like citric acid or something, to get the pH level below, and that will kill off most of the germs, and the registration is fairly straightforward. Low acid is tricky because then you probably have to use some other method of preservation, like maybe they'll boil it or pasteurize it to a certain degree, but you need proof of that. In almost all cases, you will need a lab result or an audit. It's not like you can just fill in the paperwork and hope for the best. There's companies in Bangkok that will do it, but they're not cheap. So just to give you an example, it's about $1,000 per SKU, per one item to get an audit. So that they'll send over somebody, and then they will actually go through your process, record all the steps, and they get down into the really itty-bitty detail, like for example, the type of seal that you use on the jar, the dimensions of the jar cap compared with the length of the jar, how you stack the jars inside your kiln or whatever you're doing to pasteurize it. That's all categorized, and then based on that, they'll give you a pass or a fail, or they'll tell you what to do in order to pass. Sure.
So you're saying a company here will do it for you, and then the FDA will accept their results?
Yes, so their results are, they give you a nice lab result. You have to input, or they'll input it into the FDA registration system.
Okay.
Then you should be good to go.
Okay, one more thing. I know I used to eat a lot of tuna back when I was in college, and almost every time it said packaged in Thailand. So why is Thailand so special for packaged tuna like that?
Great question. We've never shipped fish. Yeah, but I'm assuming down south you got a huge fisheries, canneries.
Just curious, because I always see back in my can shipped in Thailand.
Yeah, what we've seen more of is canned fruit, because Thailand is a huge fruit industry, so that's yeah. Passed through our warehouse a lot more.
Okay.
But I'm sure down south, yeah. Okay, so once again, yeah, you'll almost certainly need a lab result if you plan on sending a sort of acidified or low acid canned food. So if you're doing this type of food, once you first register your FDA registered facility, and then each single new item that's canned has to be tested. So if you're selling, let's say this ketchup, and it comes in a 32 ounce bottle and a 16 ounce bottle, that's two tests, $2,000. So it's not a cheap process. This is why when you're dealing with sort of canned food, it's probably going to be bigger factories that you'll be dealing with. Okay, we're done with the first round of paperwork.
Did I hear the hack? I don't know if you said, somebody said a hack is you can register as the factory if they're not registered and you can hold their paperwork, something like this?
Some people actually do this. It's not, you're technically not supposed to do this, but yes, we've got lots of cases where, let's say I own a factory and I'm selling whatever, cookies. And I don't know, like Mike, let's say you want to sell those cookies in the U.S. and you just don't tell me, but you figure out all the paperwork regarding my factory somehow, the address, my name, my phone number, and then you register for me. Yeah, we've seen it done. And then like, because a year later, the factory then tries to get registered, but the system blocks it because they've already registered. So then we have a problem. So what we typically do if that happens, because obviously we're not going to chase down whoever did it. It's way outside of what we do. We will say, well, somebody already took the manufacturer. Why don't we register where you label or you package it if it's another building? If it's, as long as the address is different, we can register that instead. And then we just keep going down the line. Oh, that's taken? Okay, do you have a warehouse that you keep your items in? We'll register that and use that for the paperwork. Sure, any questions? Okay.
I'm interested to do honey.
On what?
It's on my long list of things to do, but I want to do honey one day.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's not high on the list.
Well, we've seen the worst that can happen when you ship honey, so we can give you really good advice. Okay, so the next part now is, I wish we had a sample of something that was like packaged so you could sort of see. Do you have like a...
Like Thai Thai-made food or anything?
Preferably for the US, but yeah, if you have Thai-made food, the concept is somewhat similar. Yes, sorry, you had a question?
So you have experience taking the stuff from here, repackaging it, and then shipping it to the US?
Yeah, we can do that as well.
Okay.
Sure.
I was wondering, because it comes in the same packages here, I wonder how attractive to a product American customer would be.
Right, right, exactly. Sure.
Is there,
Yeah, so you can actually just buy the raw material. Like, let's say, I'm going to walk you through a case study in a little bit, but let's say it's raw coconut powder, and we want to package it in our own way. Then you can just make a contract with the factory, get the raw coconut powder, have it shipped to, let's say, a labeling facility or a packaging facility, and then have them brand it however you want to brand it. And then you can actually register that facility as the FDA manufacturer. And then from then on,
you can print it. Just...
Yeah. So you don't have to actually worry about opening a factory. You can just get the raw materials and go from there. Yep. All right. Mike's got some samples. Oh, perfect. Shredded wheat, that will work. It's good. Now, the shredded wheat, I'm very positive.
Is it?
It's an Aussie product, yeah.
Yeah. It'll be very similar. Yeah, it is very similar.
This is...
Perfect, yeah. Okay, so... You actually have to do the labeling correctly. And this is actually, it's not rocket science. You can do it yourself. It just takes some hours. So the first part is getting the front correct. Right, so this is the front, what's called the principal display panel. The next part is going to be your side, which is going to be your information panel, which is typically going to include your nutrition label and then a manufacturing location, allergen information, who the distributor is, contact information, that type of stuff. And then, of course, you're probably going to need additional labels to make it sellable. So if you're selling on Amazon, you might want to put an FN SKU. If you're selling in a generic like supermarket, they might get a UPC, which has been blocked out here. But those are basically your main labels, and we'll go into a little more detail. So the front part is going to be your principal display panel, right? So this is what has to be on it. Okay, so the most important thing is, besides the brand, it's what is it? So in this case, it's shredded wheat. It's very clear what it is that you're selling. You can't just make up any random name like I don't know, yummy chips or something. It doesn't make sense. So by law, it has to be what it is. So there's only very few accepted substitutions, but in general, what you're selling has to be written very, very clearly. Okay, then this one trips up a lot of Thai sellers. The weight. If you're selling in the US, it has to be ounces first, grams in parentheses. So that's pretty much mandatory. And then, of course, don't forget your brand. And that's it. This is what's required at the front. Any questions on this? Yeah, now, yes.
Those two things.
Yeah, but then we're going to go through the other parts of the packaging.
The picture and all that, you can do anything else.
Yeah, yeah. You can do it.
The name of the part.
Yeah, now, if you go through the manual, there's guidelines on like the minimum font size you can use and this or that. But it's pretty obvious. It's not like anything that's going to blow your mind. Now let's look at the information panel. This is the side. In some cases, it'll be on the back if you have a more flattened product. Or if you have a can, then it'll be on somewhere around the side of it. So what is mandatory is a contact information. Typically, the manufacturer or the distributor, you can use one or the other. So you'll see that in this case right here. There's an address, a method of contacting them. So that's mandatory. It does not have to be the manufacturer. If you're the importer, you might want to put your US address there instead, which is fine. Then there is the ingredients list. This is mandatory in order of descending weight, basically. So in this case, it's primarily whole grain wheat, so that's going to be what it is. But if you have a complicated, let's say, food item, then it might start from like noodles and then curry paste and whatever, all the way down the line. Then you're going to have your nutrition information. We'll talk a little bit more about this in a second. But let me jump over to allergen information. That's also mandatory. If there's any sort of allergens or it's made in a facility that may also process foods that are typically people get allergic to, then you should mention that as well. So let me jump on to the next slide. These are the common allergens that you need to be aware of. So you got to ask your facility, hey, is any of it made here as well? And if it is, then you just got to mark it on the side. There's a little allergen warning. It says contains whatever, eggs, peanuts, or processed in a facility that contains peanuts.
That's what I see all the time.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it. Once again, these are the main 8 major food allergens that you got to be aware of. All right, let me jump on unless there's questions here. Okay, what else needs to go on? Expiry date. So there should be a best before. Somewhere if I can find it. Usually it's just stamped on. There you go.
Yeah.
US style, this is another huge common mistake we see. It's month, day, year in the US. Whereas obviously in Thailand, like most of the rest of the world, it goes the other way around. And so this is super common. We see this all the time. We have to go back and say, hey, you need to switch this up because it's gonna confuse the consumer over there. Okay, then this is recommended, but not mandatory, is any sort of prep and storage instructions. Store in a cool, dry place, for example. Keep refrigerated once opened, for example. You should put that on as well. And then we recommend keeping it to one barcode only. And so whichever warehouse receives your items isn't confused and scans the wrong item. And then, of course, don't forget your marketing blurb. Super important, right? You gotta showcase your product. Okay, let me jump on. Okay. So this is an example of a brand. Some of you may have heard of them. They're based out in Bangkok. I've actually visited their warehouse. It's called Dang. They do dried chips. And they're actually quite big on Amazon. And this is just an example of a properly designed food packaging. You can see you've got the brand right there, exactly what it is, coconut chips. And of course, you got the net weight in ounces followed by grams here. So the front part is correct. And then the back part has the nutrition information. And it tells you what the ingredients are in descending order. And then it says there's the allergen information. It may contain tree nuts. There's the contact information right there. And then I forgot to mention this product of Thailand should be on there and quite visible as well if it's made in Thailand or whichever country. There's your barcode. There's your expiry date. And then, of course, they have all the marketing blurbs on it as well. So this is a good designed package. It's correct. No issues as far as the packaging when you import it into the US. Another thing, just a note, if you're importing Thai food and you don't plan on repackaging it, the FDA requires that if there's Thai language mixed in, the font cannot be larger than English font. Right? So it's just one of these small little tricks. You might have a Thai description, but then the English should be at least as large. Once again, it's just for the consumer. Okay, let me jump to nutrition. Okay, so this is actually, surprisingly, it's not required on all food, right? They make exemptions for small businesses. So if you're a small business and that's defined as you make less than $500,000 a year in the US, or if you sell supplements, it's less than $50,000, you don't have to have a nutrition label on it. You can just go straight to the ingredient list. Once again, if you have access to this information, definitely put it. It doesn't hurt. But if you don't, if you're not required, if you're just a startup, for example, and it can get expensive to get tested, then you might want to try it without a label for a while. There's a couple companies out in Bangkok that'll do it. Intertech is one of them, so you can just send over food samples. They'll test it for you, spit this out for you, and you can pay them. If I had to take a guess, probably 10 or 20,000 baht per test. There's a link here as well. It's called foodlabelmaker.com. When you make your nutrition label, it has to be exactly their template. Right, so this font, calories, that bar has to be exactly that thick. It's a format and it changes every few years. So you better make sure that your template is up to date. But the good thing about this website is that you can just punch in your information and it generates the perfect nutrition label for you. And then you can slap that on the back of your packaging. All right, any questions so far?
So would you recommend to do it from the beginning? You don't have to, probably, right?
Yeah. And a lot of times, if you're buying, let's say, Thai food and just repackaging, they'll have the nutrition information. Just go to a website like this, type it in again, and it'll spit this out for you.
Can you be creative and can you be funny with this at all, or it has to be?
Yeah, the nutrition label is pretty much like
it's serious. There's no jokes or marketing.
Yeah, no, definitely not. This is one of the few things that's kind of like you can't get away with.
Like you'd be funny with something.
I just like sneak a few words in there.
Yeah, like put something kind of funny, like a joke, but yeah, you can't joke.
Yeah. All right, let's jump on then. All right, yeah, and then once again, don't forget to label for your sales channel. Pretty obvious, if you're selling on Amazon, they may prefer an FNSKU, or you may have a UPC that you can register properly, and so on. This part's pretty obvious. Okay, any questions on this part of the labeling? Yep.
So is it easier for you to do it from Amazon versus like the stores, like put it in stores, according to the FDA?
Oh, are you talking about the barcoding?
Yeah.
I mean, from what we've done, we've primarily gone FNSKU, which is the Amazon code, because we want to sell on Amazon. But I'm sure if you're selling in multiple channels, it may make sense just to use a UPC.
I think Amazon recognizes UPC.
Yeah, they do. Exactly.
Okay. Actually, I have to be opposite. We like UPC because it makes us look like we're not just...
Yeah, you're legit. Yeah, exactly.
Once you find a product that you want to source from here, how do you link it to your Amazon, like from the factory to the website?
Oh, to Amazon, you mean?
Yeah.
You would probably have to get the factory's permission and see, hey, do you have a store? Or if not, can I open one for you? Can I be in like an authorized seller? That might be a process. There's a lot of people that drop ship and just sell it anyway.
So the factories will usually have like drop shipping options?
They might. I guess it just depends on the food factory, or they might have an authorized like buyer.
Okay.
Because we see a couple like tea. We send a lot of tea, and they might have like one buyer. And then if you try to buy from them, they'll be like, nope, this is our guy in the US. So we've seen that before. All right, let's jump on. All right, now importing into the US, we're about 2/3 of the way through. All right, so there's a bunch of paperwork that you have to do. This is the not fun part. So the first is your FDA declaration. You gotta let the FDA know 15 days or less out before your goods arrive, whether by air or by sea. So this requires either you have an agent that can do this for you, or you jump on the FDA website and you just fill in a bunch of forms. There may be special paperwork required, such as the FSVP, right, or phytosanitary paperwork. So if you're sending rice, for example, you'll require phytosanitary. And in some cases, randomly, you might be selected for an FSVP, which I believe stands for Foreign Service Supplier or something.
Vendor?
Yeah, vendor.
Vendor service?
Yeah, I have the acronym spelled out in the next slide or two. And then warehousing. So you probably will need a bonded warehouse in the US to store your goods, right? And the reason is, let's say your item gets randomly inspected. If it's at the pier, you could rack up some crazy fees if you can't clear your items fast enough, because they charge like hell if you can't clear your shipment out of there. So you probably want to bring it immediately into a bonded warehouse, which has already got the insurance in case the FDA needs to inspect your goods. And this way, if the FDA needs a month to clear your goods, which does happen, like, rarely, but it does happen, then at least this way you're not on the hook for some crazy storage fee with a shipping line or something. Right? You can just pay your own warehouse. And in most cases, if one item gets picked for testing, the other items in your shipment can still go on to their final destination. And then finally, you'll need to be a registered importer. Right, so I'll walk through that in a little bit more detail, but as long as if you're a US citizen or permanent resident, not a problem, you can fill it out as a person. Otherwise, you'll need an EIN or a tax number. And believe it or not, Thai businesses can actually do this too. Thai businesses can be an importer of record. All right, let me jump on to the fun paperwork. So this is what you gotta let the government know, what the FDA know before you bring in stuff. There's a huge laundry list of it. And I'll go over it very briefly. I don't want to put anyone to sleep. But you'll need your bill of lading, your container number, if you're sending by air, they'll probably give you a waybill number or similar. You'll need to know your arrival date and time into the US, who's shipping it, in other words, the exporter, who's importing it, in other words, who's taking responsibility for the shipment, information regarding the FDA facility, like its FDA registration number, a point of contact for that facility. And then, of course, your basic information for each item, like this, 50 boxes, each box is 16 ounces net weight. Therefore, the total net weight of shredded wheat that I'm bringing in is whatever that comes out to be, so on. And a bunch more information. It's kind of a lengthy series of documents. It's all online. Okay, these are the proper steps for the whole paperwork trail, right? So this is a pretty important slide if you're gonna be sending a lot of food. So first, as summarizing, you'll need your DUNS number. Then you register your facility. If you're doing canned food, then you'll do a food canning establishment registration, followed by getting each of your products tested and get the paperwork for them. Then you'll need your foreign supplier verification program. I remember the acronym. You'll need to get that done, which is just a series of paperwork that says, yes, this is a legitimate supplier. I'm not selling unhealthy food or something that's dangerous. And we'll talk to that very briefly as well. You'll either be a very small importer or a regular importer, and then check your labeling, and then do your FDA entry paperwork. And then boom, you're in. Okay, just to give you some screenshots of what some special paperwork could look like, this is a phytosanitary document. If you want to send rice or rice products out of Thailand, you may need one of those. This is a foreign supplier verification program. Basically, it's a new program that's really only been enforced and still enforced selectively over the past couple years. And it's just basically a way of testing and making sure that people are legitimately importing safe food. So you may need to have your suppliers fill out a simple form, and there's templates online. Like, can you guarantee that this food is safe, basically? And there's a bunch of little things to fill out. All right, and then let's recap on the logistics. Once again, you almost certainly want a bonded warehouse. And just to give an example of a scenario we've seen about four or five times already over the past years. Let's say you're sending in a bunch of cargo, 10 SKUs, 10 flavors of potato chips, let's say. One of them gets flagged by the FDA for testing. So we can still bring it into that bonded warehouse. The items that the FDA wants to test, we move aside. The other 9 items you can send to Amazon, Walmart, wherever it happens to be going. And this way it won't affect your shipment. If you're not in a bonded warehouse, your entire cargo could be kept at the terminal. And that would really suck, because then all your money is tied up now just because of one SKU that the FDA wants to check, right? So definitely, if you plan on really scaling and bringing in food, you're going to want some sort of a third-party logistics provider in the U.S. that has a bonded warehouse. We're one of them, but we're definitely not the only one. So definitely shop around. Some of the more common ones are like ShipBob, things like that. They also have the correct paperwork. All right, and then one of the biggest mistakes we see among especially first-time sellers is not registering the importer of record. So we get at least one or two phone calls or emails a month saying, hey, my shipment is stuck in customs. What can you import for us? Can you clear it? And that's because they fail to register as an importer, right? So that's a requirement for bringing items into the U.S. Just as a quick recap, if you're a U.S. citizen or permanent resident, all it is filling in a simple form, handing it to your agent. Your agent, your import agent, will provide you this paperwork. If you're a Thai business, there's an additional piece of paperwork that's required, but once again, it's very possible to ship and to import as a Thai business. You just have to register it. And then once again, our company can actually help you with this as well, whether you're the former or the latter. Once you do register as an importer, you keep that importer number for life. So if you run into a business that wants to charge you an annual renewal fee, that's BS, right? It's just a one-time registration, and then you're good to go. All right, we're gonna jump into sourcing, but are there any questions on the paperwork?
I mean, how much time does it take longer than non-food to import to the US?
Oh yeah, yeah. Food is probably the most difficult thing we import, because of all the paperwork.
I mean, food expires, right? So.
And it expires, yeah. So you gotta be quick.
But what's the fair expectation in your brain, in your spreadsheet here?
We usually say, if you're gonna be shipping in food, make sure it's got a shelf life of at least 18 months. Because it might take you 3 months if you're sending by sea, and then who knows how long to sell it. And then you have some platforms like Amazon, they won't even take it in unless it's got like 6 months or so left before the expiry date. And then at 4 months out, they may start telling you to kicking it off the, so you have to build in that window.
But I mean, the customs process, how long will that normally take?
Oh, it's pretty quick, actually. The paperwork itself, though, is that's a pain. It could take an hour or two. But once it's authorized, the paperwork will be done long before the ship arrives. So once, if the paperwork is done, it passes, it'll clear like just any other normal goodwill. Yeah, it'll be similar to a normal good. Because we mix some of our containers. We have food, we have clothing, we have furniture, and it all clears at once because we'll submit the paperwork prior.
Yeah, I think I had some curry powder in my last one.
Did you? Awesome. No, but speaking of curry powder, there are actually 3 things that are prohibited now from sending from Thailand to the U.S. for food, just FYI. The first is kaffir lime leaves or bergamot. Yeah, are you familiar with that? Makruut in Thai. Yeah, kaffir lime. It's called bai makruut in Thai. Can't bring it in right now because they caught a shipment filled with fungus like about a year ago, and as a result, it's just a blanket ban for the time being.
Okay.
Turmeric.
Oh, yeah.
Spices. Not from Thailand, not right now. And tamarind, believe it or not. Not from Thailand, not right now, yeah. So those three.
No tamarind salad?
Nope, no. Now, Pad Thai sauce is different, but we're talking like more like dried tamarind or something, or tamarind spice.
Okay.
But yeah. But foods that have tamarind, that's fine. We send a lot of herbs, so yeah, chilies, all sorts of Thai herbs. Yeah, I wish. That isn't even the most dangerous thing we've shipped. The one that gave us the hardest trouble was some dude wanted to send dirt. Dirt into the U.S. Now, this sounds funny, but especially the state of California, they are agricultural, like,
yeah.
So you want to send dirt in, you better have all this documentation, like, have you heat treated it? Are there any pests in it? Show me the proof. So, yeah. No, we haven't sent, but we've sent hemp, like, as clothing, but not as actual, like, edible or smokable or whatever. I'm sure there is, I just don't know it yet. Yeah, we haven't.
Why was he sending dirt?
So this guy wanted to do an Amazon store where he would sell like basically like yeah yeah like
dirt.
Yeah basically like with like
microbes,
yeah, stuff like that or whatever, and you just put your seeds in and
it's called first world problem.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. No, that was one of the weirdest requests we've had.
I want my dirt from Thailand.
Yeah.
Half what you said applies to Amazon Global Logistics. When I would, like, we need the bond, you need to be the importer yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And when I first saw that, I was like, oh, this is a headache. I'm just going to let my agent do this in China. But now after seeing this, it seems a little more reasonable.
Yeah, there's a learning curve.
Yeah.
The first shipment is going to be a nightmare, and then it just gets better.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. And now we guys on our staff can do it with their eyes closed, like just start filling in the paperwork. But yeah, okay, so these are some tips. We've sourced a lot. We've been doing this for about 10 years, so we've seen all sorts of food come across our warehouse. And the first thing is that Thai food really does sell. It is a strong point of Thailand. In the US, just statistically speaking, after Italian, Mexican, and Chinese, Thai food is the most popular, right? So people are really aware of the cuisine. And the other thing is, especially if this is your first time, we recommend focusing on dry foods, shelf-stable foods, basically 18-month plus expiry, because as I just mentioned, it's a pain to get canned food registration or anything liquid like juice. It just takes so long and it's expensive. So dried foods is so, it's virtually free to register. It just takes your time, basically. The third thing, and we've seen, bet on the jockey, not the horse. And what that basically means is if you find a good team, like a good factory, that's probably more valuable than the product itself. If they can adjust, because one of the biggest things we see is when, and you were mentioning this before, Thai factories refuse to rebrand when they export. And so that really hurts their ability to sell, because you got to rebrand for a different consumer.
Of course.
And so we run into this a lot, like maybe you should change the colors and change the font just to make it more, let's say, American friendly. And they're like, no, this is how we've always done it. My grandfather did it and this and that. And so then their product fails. And then finally, we recommend not going like a completely generic, because there's, for a lot of Thai foods in the US, there's already dominating brands. Just to give you an example, let's say Golden Mountain soy sauce or Dek Somboon soy sauce. They're well established, they're super dirt cheap. If you try to come out with your own soy sauce brand, that's gonna be a tough sell.
Yeah.
And we see that a lot as well, surprisingly. Like, we had a couple sellers do just plain jasmine white rice. And that's one of the most common Thai exports ever. So it's a tough one. But we have seen successful rice sellers in, let's say, black rice, rice berry, whole grain jasmine rice. We even had a seller that got a blend of basmati rice and jasmine rice and called it jasmati, and was starting to sell that. So that's the thing, you kind of have to, especially as a small business, I'd recommend kind of veering away from generic stuff. All right, I'll do a quick case study and then, of course, question along the way. These are just some of the brands that we've personally worked on. We have some coffee. This is just going back to the don't be generic. This is Thai traditional Thai coffee, but in a packet. So you can tear open as a kind of a tea bag style. This is sort of like a curry base, but instead of packaging in the traditional, if you go to the Thai supermarket, you see it in a jar. It's made in an envelope to make it more online friendly. This is traditional Thai herbs and spices. This is an old one. This is no longer legit, by the way, because it got banned, kaffir lime leaf. But instead of just packaging how you normally get it in like these giant plastic bags with like staples on it that you get at the market, we upscaled the packaging to make it look a little more fancy, and then you're selling it at $25 a pop now for ingredients that are worth less than a dollar, basically, you can get at the market.
Is that glass?
It's plastic.
Oh, okay. Do you ever see breakage in containers?
We do. We have a company that sends exclusively in glass. They refuse to change because it's part of their brand identity.
Of course.
But they've since figured out how to package it well.
Okay.
The worst experience we had was we had a factory here that was doing a paste, and they had a bad batch, and there was like some bacteria was like expanding, I guess.
Oh, yuck.
So we got a few cases that just exploded in our warehouse in Los Angeles, and it was a giant mess. And we're like, hey, we're gonna have to bill you for cleaning this. And they're like, no, that's your factory, your warehouse. How do we know you didn't mess it up? But it's just one of those situations that it was just a tough, they're still our customers, by the way.
So your company takes stuff and repackages for
people? Yeah, we can serve as a consultant. This is stuff we've sold on our own Amazon account. All we're doing quite well, COVID came, this is the only brand that's currently live. And then on the right, the case study that I'm going to quickly walk you through is just how we're talking about repackaging. We wanted to do, the brand is called Creamy K, and it's vegan coconut creamer powder, right? Which is it's a kind of a niche product.
Yeah.
And we picked it because we did the market research and we figured nobody's really selling it. There was only one other seller on Amazon. And a lot of people were selling coconut milk, but we wanted to do something that was a little more compact, lighter. And you could tear open, the concept was tear open, have a cup of coffee if you didn't want to have milk, basically. So we first started by researching, well, where can we find vegan coconut powder in Thailand? So we're on the phone, we're doing Google searches. Surprisingly, most coconut powder in Thailand is not vegan, right? They add elements of cow milk to sort of make it, I guess, thicker as a thickener. So we finally found one, a company that did vegan, like, and they had the paperwork and everything. So we bought like these huge, like 50 kilogram, like, what do you want to call them? Like sacks of it. And they brought it to another company that had a packaging machine right in the Chiang Mai area. And then we said, hey, put this into our packaging, a little tear open packet, which we also ordered. And then they did that for us. It was a clean, sterile environment. And so now we had our basic packets of coconut powder. And then of course, then there was the paperwork trail. We did the proper nutrition labeling, all the research, and then we actually used Photoshop and Adobe Illustrator to come out with the packaging. We sent that to a boxing factory, and then they made the boxes. We had the packets, and we just assembled it in our warehouse. And so that was basically the process of basically taking a product that would normally not have been sold like this and just converting it into an Amazon sellable product. And I think this is, yep, that's it. This is the last slide, so thank you. Yeah, once again, my name is Genghis. I'm right here in Hangdong, and you can definitely reach out.
The future of e-commerce is waiting. LoadPipe is back. It's a protocol. We are making the new way to do e-commerce with blockchain technology. This is very early stage, and we have Hamza as our first marketplace in this new ecosystem. It's very epic. If you want to participate, we are on an alpha stage in Q1 2024, where you can be a buyer or a vendor, application only. Check it out at hamza.biz for the marketplace or the overview of this protocol, and subscribe for updates at loadpipe.com. See you there. That was an intense session. Yes, also.
Yeah.
Again, the slides, I'm sure listeners might want the slides. That's at globalfromasia.com/Thai-food-export, as well as a transcript and show notes and links. So do you like Thai food, Yesha, or what? Or Filipino food?
The thing is that Thai food and Filipino food, they are somehow like similar. So there are some Thai foods that you can definitely get like a Filipino version of it. So definitely, yes, I would like that. What about you? I know that you are currently residing in Thailand right now, and how do you feel about Thai food?
So sometime in my life, I used to like spicy, but I'm not a spicy food person anymore. I guess I'm getting old, maybe. So there's lots of spicy food in Thailand.
Oh.
Which our whole family, actually, our kids, Wendy, they don't like spicy either. So there's... Mm-hmm. It's a funny story. We go to restaurants and we try to say not spicy.
Yes.
And they'll say yeah, but then it's it comes spicy.
It would end up spicy. Yeah,
it's
I know.
Still spicy.
Yeah. I mean, me neither. I really don't like spicy. I can't stand it. And yeah, I heard that Thai people really love spicy food, and especially also in the Philippines as well. We like spicy food, but not as spicy as Thai food would make their food. But regardless, I heard that, I know that as well, that Thai food is really, really good.
Yeah.
So yeah.
One of the highlights I got from Genghis is, I don't know where his data comes from, but he says Thai food is number 4 in the US. I think
Wow.
He talked about it in there, like, I think Mexicans, maybe top one, maybe Japanese, Chinese, and then Thai. I'm not sure where Filipino food's on the list.
I don't know either, but like, there's no doubt that Thailand would be able to enter. You know, there are a lot of exotic foods in there. And even though they're exotic, they look so good, and they will make you eat it, even though you do not normally eat it. They would make you eat it because just the presentation and all that is really good. So do you have a favorite food, something like that?
My favorite food is, I think it is Mexican, in the Tex-Mex, like the American Mexican, the burritos. And I think when I was in California for a little bit, I loved California burritos and fish tacos.
You just made me hungry right now for those. Yeah, you make me crave for those right now. Yeah. What about Thai food? Do you have any favorite Thai food?
Thai food for me is, so I think the rice, a lot of different rice dishes are good as long as not too spicy. And
yeah.
I hate to say it, pad Thai, but there is some really good northern Thai. Actually, there's just distinct, I think everywhere, probably in the Philippines too, the north and the south is different style food. Northern Thai has this sausage, which is it's actually spicy, but I still like it. It's Thai sausage. It's got like peppers, and it is spicy, but it still tastes good. Even though I don't like spicy, the sausage is good.
That's the thing about Thai people. They would make you eat what you would not normally eat because it tastes really good. Like, look at you. You don't like spicy foods, but regardless, you still try to eat that sausage. So, yeah.
Exactly. How about you? What's your favorite
thing?
Favorite food?
Well, I have a lot of favorite food. Like, I can eat, I'm not really picky. I mean, I can eat a lot as long as you don't give me something that is like maybe a chicken feet. I don't like chicken feet, but I like chicken intestine, chicken head. I like all this kind of stuff. Yes, crazy. Spaghetti, fried chicken. Those are the things that I like.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice,
sticky
nice.
Rice. Yeah.
Yeah. Sticky rice. That is it.
Have you tried that?
Yeah, I've had that. That was new to me in Southeast Asia. Even in China, I didn't see that much, but yes, it's nice.
Yeah, it's really good. Tastes good.
Great. And as far as e-commerce sellers, I really want to try to do food. Actually, I would love to sell food.
Right.
That's even one reason I like invite. Sometimes with these shows, I get to invite people because I want to learn myself. I'm really trying to do, because some of our categories listeners know is bars and kitchen supplies and gifts, but I think the food one is also an interesting one because people keep buying it, right? Where if it's a physical product, it might buy it again or buy it for a gift, but a food one, if they like it, they keep buying it, right?
So yeah, that's this right.
Long-term.
You keep the cycle.
Yeah.
You keep the cycle going. Right, so that's right.
I don't even know if we didn't record the whole show. We record it at the meetup. This was done at a meetup here in Chiang Mai with Genghis. I think we turned the recording off, but we had like some mastermind discussion after. And I was talking.
Yeah, yeah.
One of our products is a margarita or a mojito rimmer. It's like, I don't have it right next to me, but basically you can put the glass on plastic. It's plastic, and you can put it in the lime juice, and then you can put it in salt or sugar.
Yeah.
But we actually sell the product, but I actually talked to Genghis. He might even help us get it in Thailand, the salts.
That's good.
So people can buy the margarita salt or margarita sugars or the mojito salts.
When you're
making these drinks, you can also buy the product and you can buy the salted sugar pack as like an add-on or as a cross-sell. So it's so much to do. So much to do, but it's on the list. And we might hopefully work with Genghis on that.
It's definitely going to be worth it. I can see you have a very good vision of how this should work. And I can see that all the hard work that you guys are doing right now would definitely pay off in the future. And food is something that we do and we get and we buy every day. It's not something like it's going to get old in a year or two or something. People buy food every time. So whatever you come up with, I'm pretty sure it's going to work in the future. Yeah.
Yeah. But he did make me think of some of the problems. You got to have their shelf life because they could expire.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly.
So he says at least 18-month shelf life is what he recommends. It was one of the highlights I got from the talk.
Mm.
And then he says it's even more because you can't, like, if you, we sell on Amazon, and he says Amazon won't even accept products that expires in less than, I think, 3 or 6 months.
Oh. You know,
so it's the expiration date is because they don't want to take the food or the perishables to their warehouse.
Yeah.
So that adds some new complexity to it, but it's definitely interesting stuff. And it's something we're trying to add.
Hopefully. Yeah. I mean,
go ahead.
No, I was just supposed to say in making a business like this, it's definitely worth it to discuss the pros and cons because you make sure that you're not wasting any money nor time.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. And I think we're wrapping up our outro here.
All right.
Just want to plug our cross-border summit is...
Oh, yes, guys.
I hope people are not confused because we changed the date, Yesha, a couple of times. We're going to move it up to earlier. Last year, we did it in the middle of November last year in 2023. But 2024, we're going to do November 3rd to the 5th. And so we changed the date. So I hope I don't think people book flights yet. But if we have some early bird tickets and we're telling them we've changed the dates, November 3rd to the 5th, and we did that because we want to welcome more people coming from the China Canton Fair trips. So there's some tour groups coming with us this time from China.
Right.
They couldn't really wait around till the middle of November. So if everybody can just save the dates, we'll also announce early bird tickets. in April, we're going to open up tickets. So we'll let you guys know.
Guys, you heard Mike. Get that ticket.
Yeah.
Buy it. Otherwise, you're going to regret. Soon.
Yes, it's going to be a great one.
Awesome. Can see that. Yeah.
Thanks, Yesha. It was really great to have
you with us.
To get more info about running an international business, please visit our website at www.globalfromasia.com. That's www.globalfromasia.com. Also, be sure to subscribe to our iTunes feed. Thanks for tuning in.